As Beltwide tends to go, you put in a title back sometime in the middle of September or October, and you think you're going to be able to tell a really good story. Then you end up with 6 inches of rain or 6 weeks of rainfall that limit harvest, that limit a lot of the end of the season ideas that you had about a crop, and you end up presenting what I'll be presenting today, which is a little bit of information over a regional type project that we have going on. And what we're really trying to do is look at fruiting period of some of our modern cotton cultivars. Fruiting period is very important because it determines yield potential for our crop. And this doesn't matter if you're talking about the environment I'm in Tennessee, where we are short season, we barely have enough heat units to make a crop, or if we're talking about my counterpart, Glenn Ritchie, who did this trial in Georgia, where they have abundant heat units and typically are looking for a very full maturity crop, such as a 555, to fully maximize their yield potential in their growing environment. But some of the things that we kind of set on the plan as far as fruiting or yield potential with fruiting is, where are we at with our note above white flower at first bloom? Typically, if you look at the literature and you look at Cotman, we're talking about anywhere from 10 to 12 nodes above white flower at first bloom. In my environment in Tennessee, if we have 8 to 10, we're doing really good because we have such a short environment. In some environments, we run into this little phenomenon that Keith Edmiston calls suspended cutout, where we'll get to note above white flower 6, 5, and we'll hover for 2 or 3 weeks, not go up, not go down. We'll just kind of be almost at cutout, but we won't go ahead and cut out hard. And then in irrigation situations like Russell was just talking about, if we're able to get water on or if we get a rainfall event, we can get a rebound from that stress, which then can reinitiate fruiting, which can cause some problems of its own later on if you don't fully mature those bowls throughout the rest of the growing season. Your in-season management can affect your fruiting period, how well you control bugs, how well you get your irrigation timed. And one of the things that we're really looking at in this trial is, with the replacement of Bolgard Roundup Ready acreage, we're having a lot of variety turnover. So how are these new varieties that are going to try to fit into these short and long season environments going to perform compared to our current standards? Now, when we start talking about fruiting, we're usually talking about needing 500 heat units to get to first square. We get new nodes about every 3 days or so. Craig, I know we challenge that every once in a while from what we see out in the field. But we kind of agree that we get 850 heat units. It's about time to see that first bloom. And then we usually cut out by about the time we're to 1,500 heat units. If we look at that at my location in West Tennessee, if we plant a crop on time for us towards the end of April, it takes us on average about 60 days to get to that, or about 50 days to get to the first square, about 70 days to get the first bloom, and then run out to about 100 days or 105 days to get to our cutout. If we change that to actual calendar dates, what that looks like, we plan on the 22nd or so of April, we're looking at getting to about the 5th of June for a square, about the 4th of July for a bloom. Owen, that's our guidepost. If we don't have a bloom by the 4th of July, we know we're behind the curve. And then our cutout usually occurs sometime about a month later, between the 1st and 10th of August. That's kind of the normal growing season that we want to see in our environment. So what that gives us essentially is a 3 to 4 week period where we're setting the bowl load. That's post first bloom. But if we add in that squaring period of about 3 weeks from about the 5th of June up to the 4th of July, we're essentially looking at anywhere from a 7 to 8 week period of fruiting on that plant that we're trying to maintain to get our maximum yield. The literature tells you we normally see 18 to 22 nodes, with 12 to 16 of those being fruiting branches, and we're finding the majority of our yield on 8 to 10 of those fruiting branches. Again, that's an average across the entire belt, over many different maturity varieties. You can make those numbers higher for the full seasons, lower for the short season varieties. So some of the objectives we had in this trial was to determine cotton fruiting period and maturity differences between short season and full season cotton over two irrigation regimes. And what we're really looking at is, whenever we go to try to replace 555 in the Georgia environment, which fits well and is their top yielder, and a 444 that fit well into a short season environment such as Tennessee, What can we find, and how can we figure out what made those varieties adapt so well to that area, and can we find varieties that are going to compete to replace that market? So this trial that we designed was a two-factor factorial looking at varieties. We had two regimes. We had early maturity varieties and full maturity varieties, either the 444, the triple nickel for our standards, and then looked at two phytogen varieties that fit well in maturity to replace those in the coming years. Our second factor was irrigation. We had a full irrigation regime, which basically means we were irrigating as the crop needed throughout the entire season. We then had a reduced irrigation regime where we gave the crop the water it needed up till about 50 days after planting, about when that first square comes on, stopped irrigating, and then resumed once we reached cutout on our full season varieties. So what we were doing was trying to get our plants up to fruiting with a full water load capacity in the soil, deplete that resource till we got the cutout, try to recharge the soil and get the plants to come back. Collected a lot of data with this trial. Beginning weekly at bloom, we recorded nodes above white flower until we essentially had node above white flower zero, recorded heights at the same time. At the end of the season, we did a very extensive plant map examining both the first, second, and third fruiting sites, total height, total nodes, height of the node of the first fruiting branch, and number of vegetative branches and bowls on the plant. Fiber and yield quality also. Fiber quality is yet to come. Locations for this trial, West Tennessee at Jackson, my location, in South Georgia with Glenn Ritchie, and over in North Carolina with Keith Edmonston, trying to get a good spread of where those varieties could potentially fit in. And whenever I start moving into the data presentation here in a minute, the first thing I did was I separated out our varieties by maturity. Because number one, it would make the graphs very hard to look at if I had all four varieties on each one. Second of all, a lot of the differences that we will see in our heights or in nodes is really due to the differences in maturity of these varieties. We'll also look at irrigation regime differences and interactions when they are significant. We'll start off and look at height. Most of the data slides that you'll see will be set up very similar to this. On our y-axis, we will have our parameter we're looking at, this case, height in inches. Across the bottom, we will be looking at our weeks of bloom. So starting at first bloom and then weekly after until the seventh week of blooming. And then below that, you'll have some sort of diagnostic for statistics, whether it be a p-value or an LSD will be lifted. And then we'll also have some mean separations. Green bars will represent our standards, our Delta Pine varieties. Blue bars will represent the phytogen varieties looking to replace those. As we look at our early maturing varieties and height, it's just a pretty classical height response, over fruiting time. Basically, we get quite a bit of height change from our first, second, third week of bloom. Then we really tail off with both of those varieties. And the difference between that we're seeing is actually due to variety. 444 is just a little more growthy than the 375 with the same pitch regime. Very similar results when we look at our full maturity varieties. Again, nice growth curve, kind of flatten off when we get out there to that fifth or sixth week of bloom, so we know we're really getting towards cutout. If we step back and look at our full versus our reduced irrigation regimes, we're finding where most of that height difference is coming from. What we're finding is when we have full irrigation, we're continuing to supply that plant with the water it needs to grow, thus it's taller than it is in the reduced irrigation regimes. Again, the reduced irrigation occurred during that early fruiting period. If we look at nodes above white flower as a measure of how our fruiting is changing throughout the fruiting period on our early maturing varieties, again, we don't see much of a difference between both of those. They tend to tail off, starting off 8 to 9 nodes above white flower the first week of bloom, and then gradually moving down to 0 by the 7th week of bloom. Full maturity varieties see the same thing. Again, not much difference between the varieties within the maturity groups. If you compared them, there would be some statistical difference there, but within the maturity groups, we're not seeing much of a difference. Number of nodes over the irrigation regime. Again, Early on, when we have our measurements at first bloom, where we had full irrigation, we have about a, you know, 1 to 2 nodes more. They kind of even out as we're depleting that water resource there during early fruiting period. And then once we turn the water back on about week 3 or 4 of the bloom period, you see we start to put a few more nodes and maintain more nodes on the full irrigation plots than we did with our reduced irrigation. Total nodes separate out again with varieties. Like I've said a couple times, you know, our early maturity varieties perform very similar. Our later maturing varieties, 555 had more nodes than 567, which probably is to be expected. But again, we had a very strong strong reaction to our irrigation, where our full irrigation, we ended up with about 3 nodes more than we saw with our reduced irrigation system. If we look at reproductive branches, almost exactly the same slide as you saw before. Varieties performed the same. We had more nodes with the higher irrigation. So the first thing everybody's sitting here thinking is, okay, higher irrigation, you're going to have higher yields, right? Not necessarily the case. You'll think the same thing when we look at maturity. If we look at our early maturing varieties, again, not much difference there. 555, again, is a little bit later than the 565, so it is a, you know, true full more versus more of a mid to full. And then if we look at our irrigation regimes again, had a dramatic increase where we had the full season irrigation. Pictures of my plots from Jackson, Tennessee. On the left-hand side is our full irrigation plots. You'll notice there's a lot less white in this picture, a lot more green, a lot more vegetative growth compared to the reduced irrigation side, a lot more open bowls to look at. So when we go out and we actually start doing our plant mapping and looking at open bowls, what were we finding? Well, we'll look, you know, within the varieties here over the irrigation regimes. 444 under a full irrigation regime, at about 130 days after planting, we were looking at about a total of 38% open bowls. And the majority of those were the green first position bowls on this chart. In our reduced irrigation, we're at 94% open bowls. Over 55% of those are first position, much more second position bowls open, and even some third position bowls are there. 375, you know, similar in response to 444, but still only about 20% open with the full irrigation, whereas we're looking at about 75% open with the reduced. And both of our full season varieties at our Tennessee location were showing less than 38% open bowls regardless of irrigation regime. Lint yields. No statistical difference between the varieties at Tennessee. However, there was a huge disadvantage to full season irrigation. You saw all those extra bowls and all that green tissue in that picture. Those bowls never matured because it got cloudy and rained all of September and all of October. Georgia, some statistical separation in yields. What you'll notice is that the full season maturity cottons raced to the top. But again, even in Georgia, where they had plentiful rainfall this year, their full irrigation regime showed a reduced yield. So let's just summarize real quick and wrap up. Plant height differences, there were slight differences within maturity groups, but the higher irrigation provided more height. I don't think that's a surprise to anybody. But what is kind of surprising is that in those full irrigation regimes, we were seeing about 7 more inches of plant growth by the end of the season. Slight differences for our note above white flower fruiting period within the maturity group. Again, higher irrigation provided more nodes above white flower. Full season varieties had more total nodes and more reproductive nodes. The higher irrigation regimes had more nodes. Maturity, the full season and higher irrigation increased our note above crack bowl and reduced our percent open bowls, as was evidenced by our plant map. And our lint yields were reduced because of the full season irrigation and also because of some limited heat units in Tennessee, whereas in Georgia we saw that the full season varieties produced much better having the longer growing season. Both locations were adversely impacted by weather. I showed this earlier today. That's how you know when you need to stop irrigating. Anybody have any questions? Got time for maybe one.
Yeah, we've got time for one question if someone has one.
Since you were making plant maps, couldn't you count the bowls per section a row and estimate what that yield might have been if it hadn't rained so much?
The question is, since we were doing the plant maps, could we have estimated what yield could have been? Yes, the answer to that would be. And part of the problem is with the detailed plant mapping we did do in this trial, we have got so much data to go through that it's just, by this time, it was almost impossible to try to compile that over three different locations to look at.
But you do have.
Yes, sir, we do. And we will be repeating this trial in the future and reporting on it again, most likely next year.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Craig.